LZ, I don't know what made you ask that question about arachnophobia, but now I get to send you my picture of the tarantula that nearly ate me to death yesterday on my walk. I'm really excited about this.
Well, your story sounds more interesting. I'm just looking at a couple of spiders on my deck. Tell me about this killer tarantula you stumbled upon.
I'm out with a walk yesterday, and Susan and I are going along, and all of a sudden we see these people kind of like standing and staring at the ground, and we because where we walk, there's usually snakes, you know, and you know, kind of unusual to just see a snake slithering by. So I'm thinking, and I say to the guy, I'm like, "Oh, snake?" And he goes, "No, tarantula." And I went, "What?" And he says, "Yeah, it's a tarantula." So I go over there and I'm sending you this picture right now of this tarantula. And it is absolutely, I didn't know tarantulas were in California. I could easily just be wrong about that. And it may not be a tarantula, but it's a spider about the size of my hand covered in fur. So to me, that's a tarantula.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Gosh, so remember, they don't have venom. That? They can't hurt you like that. It's just a big spider.
Shut up. Anybody trying to, Raj, shut up. Shut up, Raj.
You watch too much of the Brady Bunch.
Of my hand, if a spider the size of my hand and has fur all over it is walking up on me, I'm not looking to check to see if it's brown, leave it around, if it's black, get back. I'm not doing none of that stuff.
All right, I just said it to you. Tell
I'm
me,
running
tell
out
me
the way.
Pops up. Tell me when it pops up, because you should have it here. I sent it to all three of you guys.
Oh, my God.
Look at that thing.
First of all, if an insect is big enough to have a long shadow, get out of the way. Move.
Yeah.
Why does this bug have a big-ass shadow?
Look at the fur. Zoom in. Look at the fur.
Dude, and here, yeah. And Raj ass talking about, oh, well, it might not be venomous. It's okay.
No, not might know? Not. They are not. They're not gonna fight. They're not. They don't do that. They're not. Yeah. You can let them walk on you and stuff. You guys gotta watch more Jacques Cousteau and read your encyclopedias.
What discipline of science deals with insects? That's not epidemiology, is it?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Let's move on.
There's got to be at least bugology. There's got to be one person listening to us that knows bugs. So, I mean, you know what I'll do? I'm gonna post this, and somebody needs to answer the question exactly what sort of killer spider this is. Did you watch Arachnophobia again or something?
No, I just opened the blinds to my patio, and I have two spiders. One has made a web on the window proper because they wanted to make sure I saw him. And then the other one has connected to my umbrella, my sunbrella, in a nearby tree and created this whole little housing situation for himself. And he's in the dead center of it. And they did all this last night because I was out there smoking pot last night and I didn't see any spiders, but I was high. So maybe they were there last night and they were the people I was talking to. I thought I had friends over. Maybe it was just the spiders I was talking to. I don't know. It's a good thing.
One of my buddies is already texting me and correcting me, saying, "Spiders aren't insects, you idiot. They're a different category." Whatever. Okay. To the rest of us, they're insects. They have legs and fur, and they're scary, so it counts as an insect. I'll post it in a second. Dodgers get a win last night, LZ. They fell behind by a couple of runs, but there's a whole bunch of good news in what we saw last night. And let's start with this. Dustin May is going to be a real problem for the rest of baseball for a very long time. This is a 22-year-old guy who is inexperienced at the major league level, and yet I don't know how anybody gets a hit off of him. He's throwing 99 miles an hour. The ball is dipping and diving, you know, 6-8 inches at a time. He's able to locate that stuff pretty well. He didn't even pitch all that great last night and struck out 8 guys in 6 innings. That's how much trouble he's going to be.
Well, and the best thing is it was a career night. And when you think about his last two starts, they're quality starts against good teams. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not getting fed off the Giants. You know, I keep harping on the Giants because I don't like them. and I guess that's okay in this town not to like them. But trust, I arrived not liking the Giants. So I was born this way. The thing is that Dustin May's stuff was never the question. The question was about whether or not the moments were going to be too big for him, but given his lack of experience and his age, 22 years old. I think he is showing us, much in the way that Walker Buehler shows us, that the moments, they may initially give him some jitters, but he can quickly pull it back together. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw Walker in Atlanta in the postseason have initial jitters and then was able to kind of right himself. We've seen Dustin May have some early jitters and then right himself. And eventually what happens, the transition, and you know this as well as anyone, Travis, the natural transition for great pitchers is that those early morning jitters never show up on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's still at the age where the initial jitters are showing up in those first couple of appearances in the innings. Now, we're waiting for him to get to the point in which he is familiar with all this. He doesn't have the jitters, and he's in complete control. And once he reaches that point of awareness, it's a wrap, man. That dude's stuff, 100 miles per hour with movement?
With Come movement. On, it's the movement,
it's the
more
movement.
Than anything.
Because yes, it's the movement.
We've entered a phase in Major League Baseball where if you throw 100 miles an hour, it's still useful. Don't get me wrong. But so do a lot of other guys. You know what I mean? Like it used to be 20 years ago, if you threw 90 miles an hour, not bad. If you threw 95, you were a flamethrower. And if you got up in the 97, 98, forget about it. You were untouchable. Now, just about every guy that comes out of a major league bullpen is over 95 miles an hour. Unless you're a left-handed specialist, you're over 95. The Dodgers have Gratterall throws 100, May throws 100, Buehler throws 100. They've got a bunch of guys that can do it now. So that's one part of the equation. But it's the movement. He threw a pitch, a two-seamer, to a right-handed hitter. You know, Dustin May is a right-handed pitcher. He throws it to a right-handed hitter. The ball takes off out of his hand over the middle of the plate. And by the time the guy for the Padres was done swinging, the ball had nearly hit him in the belt buckle. I mean, it was just an unbelievable amount of movement. And that's him. Then you kind of move to the rest of what the Dodgers are doing right now. Think about this, OZ. Cody Bellinger, while he's been better the last couple of games, is off to a very slow start. Mookie Betts has not played the last couple of nights because of a hand injury. He got off to a little bit of a slow start before kind of getting going and then gotten hurt. Justin Turner, who you and I know agree on for the last couple of years, has been arguably the Dodgers' toughest out in any situation. We haven't talked too much about him. Max Muncy, 70 home runs over the last 2 years, is hitting under 200. And the Dodgers are 8-4. Okay, this is really bad news for the rest of baseball. Clayton Kershaw's pitched once, and the Dodgers are 8-4. Walker Buehler hasn't been stretched out in any meaningful way yet, and the Dodgers are 8-4. The Dodgers are 8-4 because A.J. Pollock's unconscious, because Corey Seager is unconscious, because Kike Hernandez has played well, Chris Taylor has played well, Jock Peterson's been a little uneven. But the Dodgers are winning 2 out of every 3 games, and their very best players have not started to play like their best players yet. If I'm a National League team, if I'm in any team in the American League, maybe with the exception of the Yankees, I'm looking at that saying, you know what? They may have finally found the secret sauce.
Listen, anytime you can get off to a good start without your best players having their best moments is a really good sign. Really, really good sign. It's sort of like when the Lakers and Clippers played each other. And you know that LeBron wasn't shooting the ball particularly well, and Paul George was just smoking hot, and we've had all these missing players, and we still found a way to win. That felt good. If you can have this many wins, and it's not because last season Bellinger got off to such a hot start, it was impossible to lose, but instead it's because you're a good team with a lot of depth, and you have so many weapons that Cody can afford to be batting less than – what is he at, 200 right now?
Cody is batting 184.
184.
Yep.
The MVP is batting 184, and you've won 8 out of 4 games, 8 out of 12. That's not bad. Not bad at all, man.
You know, there needs to go some credit to the guys that are running this team, too. And we give them a hard time when they don't do things. We need to give them some credit when things are working out exactly as you would imagine, because – this is not just where they went out with the checkbook and started stroking checks for every good player that was available. That's not what this is. Yes, they went out and made a deal for Mookie Betts and gave him, you know, nearly $500 million. They did do that with him. But the rest of this, Jock Peterson is a guy that they drafted and developed. Max Muncy is a guy that anybody really could have had. The Dodgers identified him and turned him into the player that he is. Justin Turner was available to a lot of people. He was not looked at as a high-level player. He's been a multiple-time All-Star for them. Cody Bellinger, drafted and developed. Cody Seager, drafted and developed. Matt Beattie, drafted and developed. Edwin Rios, drafted and developed. Chris Taylor was basically a platoon guy, not a very effective one in Seattle with the Mariners. Dodgers get him. He becomes an important part of a championship caliber team. Kike Hernandez, drafted and developed. I mean, these are guys that they've identified in amateur baseball and brought to the big leagues. This isn't just we have the second biggest market in the country. We had an $8 billion television contract and we can go spend it. They know what they're doing. And then you look at the depth and the flexibility and the bullpen arms that they've been able to do. This is a team that's not just good. They're going for their eighth division title in a row. It sounds crazy to say this. They could win eight more in a row, and it wouldn't surprise me at all just because of how young and good they are. And it's not just because of these guys. It's because you know that they're going to pick the next right guy as well.
And that's the thing. When you have a competent franchise, regardless of sport, you think every season is your year. You know, you just do. I mean, there's a reason why it was hard for people to pick against Belichick and Tom Brady. There was a reason why it was hard to pick against the Spurs. When we had Shaq and Kobe and Phil, it was hard not to pick them to win it all. Because when you have a well-run organization that knows how to replace pieces and keep main pieces and keep the drama to a minimum, you're built for success. So there's so many teams and so many sports that on paper are championship caliber teams. But paper doesn't win chips. Players do. Mm-hmm. Front offices do. And so you got to prove that you can actually be more than just potential. The Dodgers, this collection of talent that they put together in the front office and with Dave Roberts and the youth that we have, they've proven that they're more than just paper champions. That they know how to have a franchise that's built for the immediate, the short, but more important, the long term as well.
It's the hardest thing for any executive to do. It really, truly is to be good and also not get caught with your pants down for the future, right? Because it's yep. I don't want to say it's easy, but it's easier to go all in. Right. And I'm not. Rob Pelinka has done a really good job with this team. He's another guy that got a lot of criticism. And it turns out he was on point with a lot of this stuff. But it's not super complicated to say, I want Anthony Davis on my team. What's it going to take? Right. You want these four guys? Fine. Take him. I'll take Anthony Davis. OK, that is the easy one. Now, it's risky because if it doesn't work out, you've traded away all your draft picks and all your youth. Now you're stuck in this position that we're talking about, where what happens after this year, 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road? It's hard because as an executive, as a team builder, that's your job, is to always be thinking 2, 3, 4 years ahead. It's very difficult to do what the Dodgers have done, which is a mix of veteran and youth, expensive and inexpensive, your guys and other organizations' guys, and have it set up for the now, the immediate future, and the long-term future, and that's where the Dodgers are.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a nice, nice place to be. I'm just bummed that we can't be there, you know? Everything's clicking finally. We finally got everything right with the teams that we love most, and we're unable to be in the spaces to cheer our guys on. But the good thing, Travis, is that we got the internets, we got the TVs, we got the radios, and we'll have the memories. And when we're finally able to celebrate properly, my friend, I look forward to the day of rubbing elbows with someone I don't know and never want to talk to. I look forward to it.
So, okay, I'm sure you have. Hearing you say that, I think I know the answer to this. But have you watched old movies or old sport? And not by old, I mean 6 months ago, but old sports highlights, and you're just absolutely blown away by what's going on in the crowd, or these situations where people are in a restaurant or a bar or a concert, or where people are shoulder to shoulder. You're like, well, that doesn't look safe at all. I mean, we've just entered this entirely new era where if there's another human being within 10 feet of you, like, dude, I'm going to need you to back up. I'm going to need you. You can't go to a ball game. What are you, crazy? You can't even look at it the same way anymore.
It's weird. I mean, I'm a festival goer, music festival goer. And social distancing is being able to turn without touching somebody. That's the social distancing at a festival. Normally, especially if it's a headliner, you're jam packed and you're just touching each other nonstop for 3 hours, sweating and singing, and that's just the way it is, and you don't think twice about it. Now I'm gonna be wearing a hazmat suit. It's gonna be a little warm in Lollapalooza next year.
Well, just get the one with the big plastic face shield so at least you can see everybody that's going on around you. I have some quick answers for you, LZ. I put the picture up on my Twitter feed. These are the answers as to what that spider is. One, Zach Gibson says it's the spawn of Satan. Run away. Another person says,
well done.
Christopher says it's a wolf spider. So I don't know if that's a real answer or not. Somebody else says that's just a regular tarantula. It looks like somebody's pet that's escaped. Somebody says, from the looks of it to me, it looks like a spider. So thank you, everybody. Very, very helpful.
Yeah, it's not a wolf spider. I just looked it up. Wolf spider is not nearly as hairy.
I just know that I don't ever want to see one of those things again. Amin El Hassan joins us next. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, as promised, we are joined by ESPN front office insider Amin El Hassan checking in. Amin, how are you?
Hi, gentlemen.
What's up, sir?
Not much, man. Just enjoying these high-quality basketball games that are the bubble is bringing us.
All right, so here's my question to you, my friend. When you look at the teams that are within four games of playing for that eighth seed in the West, we know Memphis is done because of the injury. We know Sacramento is done because Sacramento. But Phoenix and Portland are intriguing. I'm assuming you're going to go with Portland. Does Phoenix have a shot of facing the Lakers when the tournament happens?
This is the dumb and dumber, so you're saying there's a chance. There absolutely is a chance, right? Because they're 3-0 and they beat two really good teams. So, like, and they got momentum. They're feeling good. So, let's assume for a second. Let's just start with Phoenix goes 8-0. They beat everybody. They go undefeated. The problem is they need three more teams to mess up. Now, Memphis looks like it's on its way. By the way, I would say Memphis is messing up before Jaren Jackson got injured.
Yeah, that's true talk.
Right. So they already started that voyage without that little boost. So I'll take that one down. But then they need San Antonio and New Orleans to mess up. And even though New Orleans is 1-2, their schedule gets ridiculously easy from here, right? And Zion is only going to get more in shape from here. So those things conspire against New Orleans dropping. And then San Antonio, like, we do this every year. I went into this bubble thinking, this is it, San Antonio, let's not even talk about them. And lo and behold, they're going to do the San Antonio thing where they're going to end up somehow with the 9, and then they'll beat Portland in that two games, whatever, and then they'll face even though I picked the Blazers to be the team that faces the Lakers in the first round, I'm watching San Antonio, I'm like, here it goes, man.
Really?
And I hate them so much, yeah. They're the zombies in the movie, right? Like the killer in the movie, right? You think it's dead, and everyone's all, thank God that's over. And then it kind of rises up from behind you and, you know, takes out a knife. I don't know.
I want to go back to something you said a minute ago. As Zion continues to get more in shape, is this just going to be the way that we talk about Zion through his career, his fitness being an important part of what he is as a player? Because coming into it, it was a topic. Coming into the league, it was a topic. Coming into the bubble, it's a topic. Is his fitness just a part of who he is, and we're always going to have this conversation?
Yeah, Travis, in the sense, not in an Oliver Miller sense that, like, here comes this guy again, you can't stay on the wagon, but any setback that happens to him, an injury, in this case, a family emergency where he had to go home, did not have access to training or working out, and then came back and obviously had to sit in quarantine in a hotel room. Altogether, it was about 2 weeks of him not working out. But that's all it takes for Zion. He is always going to be someone, he is the epitome of no days off, right? He doesn't get to have a cheat day. He doesn't get to, oh, I'll rest, you know, this weekend. He's got to continuously be on it because he puts on weight so quickly. And so when we saw him return to the bubble, when we saw him get to the bubble originally, he was cut. He was looking, oh, man, you finally look like you're in shape. Mm-hmm. And he leaves. He comes back 12 days later, and it's like, oh, there he is again. There's Fat Albert again. And so that's not – again, I want to stress, that's not him being lazy. that's not him, like, not following the protocol that they gave him. That's him just not having access to, you know, working out. And this is special times because of coronavirus, but what's more realistic, Travis, is he gets hurt, you know, breaks his ankle or has a really severe ankle sprain, can't run for a while, puts on weight. That, I think that's going to be a recurring thing for him. If he gets injured, he's going to put on weight, unless it's like a thumb or a hand or something like that. And so he has to constantly be on top of his diet and his exercise.
Can he not transfer some of that weight to Brandon Ingram? Does it not work that way? Probably not.
That's like DMX and Snoop Dogg and when they had their first DMX and Will was like the number 10.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well for DMX, in my opinion. When you look at the way that the Lakers have performed in this bubble, are you at all concerned, as I am, about how easy backcourt players have been able to score against them post-Avery Bradley? Like, every single backcourt has had at least one 30-point score.
Short answer is no. I'm not concerned about that. I think, again, these games, you could tell LeBron's not in quite the shape he wants to be. So a lot of these games are just guys getting back to it. I thought Caruso has done a good job thus far defensively. I think as J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters also round into shape, I think they'll be great assets defensively. You know, the one takeaway I have is, they still struggle against small ball lineups. That's you know, that Toronto game and even that Clipper game where they were up and it kind of got close at the end, where it really shouldn't have, they struggle with the small ball lineup. The Lakers are not good at small ball, and which is weird because you think with Anthony Davis at the five, you should have an advantage over anybody, but it just doesn't seem to work out that way. And the other thing is, talked about it before that last game, you know, he needs to be aggressive. He, like, Anthony Davis can't afford to kind of coast or not go as hard as possible. And so you look at the fourth quarter of that Clipper game, you look at the Toronto game, you can't have seven shots for a game, man. Like, that can't happen. You are right. One of the best players in the league, and you are one of the best players on this team. He has to be able to generate offense, even if he's not good at it, even if he has a poor shooting night, right? Like, I think Kobe had the quote, like, you'll never see me go three for seven or two for seven. He's like, all right, why not? Because I'm going to go like 2 for 17 or 2 for 27. There's no way I'm going to end up with just seven shots.
Amin El-Hassan joining us here on the morning show. Amin, are we going to see – let me back up a little bit. Coming – as the season was progressing regularly, it seemed like we were going to get the Lakers and the Clippers in the West, and we were going to get Milwaukee and Toronto, maybe Boston pops up in the East. Do you still feel like that, or because the bubble is just so unusual and so unpredictable? We saw that Brooklyn beat Milwaukee last night, that Portland might be a number 8 seed, that Phoenix is screaming hot right now. Are we going to get something weird? Are we not going to get that Final Four that we thought we were going to get a few months ago?
Well, I would say that Phoenix is the only weird part of what you said. Milwaukee lost last night, but they were sitting guys to start the game, and then Giannis didn't play the second half. I mean, that to me is just like, it's like a preseason game. That's how you treat a preseason game, where half of our roster isn't available, and then the good guy doesn't even play in the second half. That to me is like, all right, we get it. This doesn't matter. I felt Portland, because, you know, they got healthy. They're the team that, from a roster standpoint, improved the most out of any team coming to the bubble, because they had two starters basically who were hurt for most, if not all, of the year. So Portland isn't weird to me. But Phoenix is. That's a weird one. Like, who could have saw that coming, especially the last two wins they had. As far as that last Final Four, I think Clippers-Lakers, still a lot that's going to happen. In the East, I'll be honest, even before the pandemic, I wasn't so sure it was going to be, you know, Milwaukee, Toronto there. I think Miami has a really good chance of beating Milwaukee in the second round if they should meet. And then obviously Toronto or Boston, I think that's a pretty good matchup as well in the other conference semifinals. So I think you might see any combination of Boston, Toronto, Miami, or Milwaukee in the East final.
You know, Dame Lillard – you know, say, had some strong words with people who keep dissing Carmelo Anthony and saying that, listen, he's a Hall of Famer. He still can get the job done. Who in the bubble is going to, once the postseason starts, have an unexpected rise? Who are you waiting to see that's going to really break out and we should have our eyes on? Not the usual suspects, but the person who's been waiting for this moment.
I feel like this guy has now become a usual suspect of his play in the bubble, but TJ Warren, he's got to be the story so far this bubble. He's in not only big scoring output, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 111 points in the first three games, but extremely efficient. He's wildly efficient out there. And this is, you know, before the season started, he was my preseason pick to be most improved player because I've seen TJ here in Phoenix for 4 or 5 years, that he was here. He's an incredible scorer. He's got a knack for putting the ball in the hole. He's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve. His three-point shot was traditionally his weak point, and he got better at it. And I just felt like in Phoenix, they never really gave him a chance. It was a situation where, obviously, Devin Booker is awesome. No one's disputing that. But then they kept looking for other wings, whether it was signing Trevor Ariza or drafting Mikal Bridges or, you know, all these wings throughout the history since he's been there. And I said, this guy needs to be somewhere where his gifts are going to be appreciated. And going to Indiana, where Oladipo was hurt at the beginning of the year, I thought this is an opportunity for TJ to really get a lot, to show what he's capable of, because Indiana is a team that can't generate a lot of points on its own. He had a good regular season, obviously didn't catch a lot of eyes. But now coming back with Sabonis out, with Oladipo in and out of the lineup, he's become a primary scorer for them. And I think everyone's seeing the type of player he is. So he's a guy that, you know, once they get to the playoffs, I imagine he's going to have some more big performances.
All right, very quickly, Amin, if you are grabbing something quickly out of a vending machine, a quick little snack, your go-to item is what?
Yo, I like the little fruit snacks, Welch's Fruit Chews. It's good. It's, you know, a little pick-me-up, you know. By the way, is Keyshawn still negotiating? Like, remember last time I was
apparently the
Cuomo's in his voice on.
Apparently the negotiations went well, and he's going to start his new show here in a couple of weeks. So he'll be
Keyshawn out again.
Jay Will and Zubin in 2 Mondays from now.
Are we sure?
I'm told
to walk in like one day.
Well, you never know.
I'm told that Norby and Pitaro showed up at Keyshawn's house with a big boombox, and they had it raised over their head, and he just couldn't resist. That's what I'm told has happened. There's no footage of it, but that's what I'm told what occurred.
And now I'm imagining Norby in a trench coat.
There you go. There you go. Amin El Hassan, ESPN front office insider. Thanks, Amin.
No problem, guys.
You got it. I did not think we were going to have a Say Anything reference in the show today, but I'm pretty happy, LZ. I'm glad it went the way that it did. Lakers are the number one seed, and LeBron is listening. We'll tell you what it is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. I'm looking at the TV right now, LZ, and they're breaking the breaking news. UConn has become the first FBS football program to pull the plug on their season because of the coronavirus pandemic. And you have to wonder if they're not going to be the last. This just feels like the beginning of a slow process of a bunch of teams ultimately landing at the same conclusion, which is, you know, this just isn't going to work.
Well, listen, man. And I just wrote a column for the LA Times today, just talking about the dynamic that's being asked, right? You're asking these kids, you know, not adults, they're kids. And even if they're 21, anyone who has adult children knows if you have a 21-year-old in the house, you still got a kid. The government may think they're an adult, but you know that's a problem. And these kids are being asked to put themselves at risk for a virus that has killed north of 150,000 people in a relatively short period of time in the United States. And you're asking them to risk it all for tuition, room and board, because the industry, the multi-billion dollar industry that's built on their talents, would collapse if they don't take the risk and show up. And that's the dynamic. And you can sit here and phrase it any kind of way you want, but the truth of the matter is that it's the kids, it's the student athletes who are taking the greatest risk, and their families. are taking the greater risk, because even if the kids don't get sick, as we know with the coronavirus, they can bring it to other people.
Sure.
That's the dynamic. So any administration with an ounce of morality is going to look at that and say, as much as it's going to hurt, we can't ask them to do that.
Well, like,
we want football back. We want college sports back. We love watching fall college sports. But if you're an administrator and your job is to look after the well-being of these students, it's really an incredible ask in these incredible times. And the responsible thing to do, in my opinion, is to do what UConn is doing, to do what some HBCUs are doing, to do what Yale is doing, which is saying we can't guarantee that these vulnerable young people are going to be safe playing this sport at this time. We would much rather bite that bullet than deal with the repercussions of forcing them to play.
I'm happy that you think that these athletic departments might have an ounce of morality, as you put it. I just don't have any faith in that.
Just
at all.
An ounce. I don't need a pound, Travis. I think they've demonstrated
that that's not where they live and breathe. They can talk about student athletes and creating the next generation of leaders and, you know, creating men and women through sports and all these things. Fine. You guys can go ahead and say that.
All those buzzwords.
Right. I know what you're about. But here's what they are. Here's what they do understand. And while they maybe don't understand the morality of doing the right thing for the right reason and keeping young people safe because that's the right thing to do, they do understand liability. That they understand really, really well. They understand what getting sued and losing means. They understand what getting sued and losing publicly means. And look, I'm knocking on every piece of wood in my office right here. I'm crossing my fingers and toes. I hope nothing happens to anybody. I really don't want anything to happen. But as we know, you don't know who this virus is going to hit the hardest. You don't know which guy or which woman is going to be the one that gets terribly sick or worse. And if the problem is that you have everyone else on campus is social distance, if you have everyone else on campus that is at home, perhaps taking classes online, but you bring in the football team and somebody dies, good luck.
I mean,
good luck. And that's why I don't think it'll go. I don't think it's not going to go because somebody says, you know what? These are 19, 20-year-old guys that are playing for free. This is a terrible, terrible idea. No one's having that conversation in those private rooms. But the conversation of, look, I don't know which one of these guys is most vulnerable, and neither do you, and neither does any doctor or scientist. We don't know exactly how to keep these guys safe right now. Let's not do this, because the last thing we want to do is cut a check with two commas in it because we couldn't get this right, because we could have easily decided not to do this. Other places have decided not to do this. I'm not going to be the one that bankrupts this university because we made a terrible decision. That conversation is taking place.
Well, it's not taking place in Colorado State. Have you heard the latest that's happening there?
Hit me.
I'm going to hit you. It's not going to feel good, though.
Uh-oh.
On Tuesday, it was reported that the Colorado State football coaches told players they shouldn't disclose COVID-19 symptoms and that quarantine and the missed practice time that comes with it could threaten their overall playing time.
At Colorado State. Yeah, perfect.
It's been reported that that's what the football coaches told their players. Don't tell me that you're sick. And if you get sick and you need to spend time in quarantine, well, your spot, your playing time may not be there with you when you come back on the other side.
I want to say I can't believe it, LZ, but I can believe it. I can believe it. I mean, we saw the guy from Washington State yesterday tell one of his players, look, if you want to take time away for coronavirus, I get it. But if you want to take time away to fight for something you believe in, you're no longer a part of this program. There's nothing you could tell me at this point that I wouldn't believe.
Yeah, if I'm the university president, somebody has to get fired, man. Someone's got to get fired at Colorado State. So if I'm the university president and this information proves to be true, somebody has got to lose their job, because you are literally telling children to not disclose that they may have a deadly virus. And if you need time to recover from this deadly virus, you're going to lose your playing time. What the hell? What the hell is that? I mean, seriously, Colorado State, somebody has got to be, this isn't a t-shirt that says OAN. And oh, by the way, I didn't know what it really meant, even though everybody knows I did.
That's another lie.
This isn't, yeah, the coach used the N-word, but he didn't direct it towards black people. They were just in the room. Like, it's not even that. This is straight up, if you got the rota, keep that ish to yourself. And if you need time to recover from it, well, you know, we ain't got nothing for you, dog. Who's sending their kids to that coach? If that coach came into your living room and said anything about, I want to take Bobby, I want to do blah, 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 would you send your kid there?
No, I wouldn't. And this is the thing that just blows me away. The decisions that we're talking about right now, whether it's Colorado State or Washington State or Oklahoma State or any of these places that we've talked about in regards to bad decision-making by the head coach and his assistants of late, these are bad decisions for you. You know, you're not just putting your players in a bad position, which you obviously are, but I get that you don't care about them. I don't respect it, but I get it. I get that you're here to win football games, and if that guy isn't going to help you, get him the hell out of here. It's gross, but I get it. What I don't get is you're saying these things and doing these things that are ultimately going to prevent people from coming to play football for you. That's bad for you. That's the part that I really can't wrap my head around, that what happened at Washington State, what we're talking about at Colorado State right now, now that that's out, the next guy that has an opportunity to go, and again, look, if you're a football player at Colorado State or Washington State, you're not just going to say, okay, I'll just go to Alabama. You're on a certain tier if you're playing there anyway. But there are other schools on that tier that I'm sure would be more than thrilled to have you go there. And yet you're almost telling someone you don't want to come here because I don't have your best interest in mind. Or even worse than that, I don't have your best interest in mind. In fact, I have none of your interests in mind. I have only my own personal feelings in mind, and that's it.
And it's crazy. It's crazy. And this is the same structure where Colorado State is able to operate and they can say these things to these players. This is the same structure that has convinced so much of America that the NCAA and the rules that are in place are there to protect the students from vultures. That's how they sold all of this. That the NCAA and the structure that's in place right now, their sole purpose isn't to make money. Their sole purpose isn't to raise the popularity of universities and create an ecosystem where billions of dollars can be exchanged. No. They're telling you the sole purpose is to make sure little Johnny doesn't get signed up with the vulture agent. That's what they're trying to convince you.
Uh-huh. And it worked for a long time.
It did work for a long time. And now little Johnny is at Colorado State being told, oh, you got a fever? Huh.
Keep that to yourself.
Keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What the hell, Travis?
Yeah. Well,
what the hell? And let's just cut to the chase, shall we? We know who is being asked to put themselves at risk, and we know who is asking them to do all the risky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
people accuse me all the time of injecting politics and race in every conversation. It isn't true, first of all. But if you don't see that dynamic, then you're being willfully ignorant, or worse yet, you're being nefarious and not acknowledging the obvious.
All right, we're going to continue that conversation coming up in just a little bit. But next, take it or shake it. Okay, LZ, let's start with an NBA topic, something that we talked about with Amin a few minutes ago. Let's take a listen to Jay Williams, who's talking about Zion and Zion's injury and his tendency to put on weight.
He does look a little bit oversized. He doesn't look like what he was when he first reported the training camp. But I still think, you know, David Griffin and what they're doing there, you need him long term. And if he's not in a position to give you the minutes that you need, then you have to ramp him up slowly. And that's just what we're going to talk about with Zion. And my hope, though, I hope that we don't have to talk about this for his entire career. Like, I hope and I pray that next season he's able to play you know, 35, 36 minutes per night, and we're talking about him having those type of numbers, or it makes you wonder, will we always be talking about Zion to some degree, some form or nature, with a minutes restriction? And that's a big-time question looming around his career.
Zion Williamson's weight and injury history will be around for his entire career. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
I mean, we've talked about it, Travis, at the very beginning of it. Mm-hmm. Watching him walk, realizing that the team are working with him in terms of the pattern, the kinesiology behind his running. Everything about the way he moves is both exciting and troubling because of the knock-knee manner in which he carries himself and the weight that's being carried. And so you can certainly get away with stuff at 19, 20, 21-year-old that a 26, 27-year-old can't, because after a while, the wear and tear is expedited because of the weight. And so, and the weight is part of the thing that makes him intriguing. So to me, yeah, that doesn't mean he's not going to be a Hall of Famer. That doesn't mean he's not going to have a great career. It just means that, you know, he's just going to be hampered with injuries probably for the duration of his career.
Well, and the other part of it is, too, and this is the scary thing to me. If we're talking about your weight as a 20-year-old, that's not good. You know what I mean? When we talk about somebody's weight as a 20-year-old, you want it to be like Brandon Ingram. Like, that guy needs to put on some weight. He needs to get some bulk. He needs to spend some time in the weight room. But presumably, at 20, you're 19 years old, you should be in really good shape. The problem should not be that you're carrying too much weight. Maybe you're not in prime physical condition the way you might be after spending a few years in the league, but that this is already a repeated conversation with him, I do not think is a good indicator that this is going to go away anytime soon. Let's go to the next one here. Let's take a listen to Tim Kirchin, who was talking about Rob Manfred being interested in only protecting himself.
I know several players that I talked to were at best confused by what the commissioner said, because clearly the players are ones in peril right now, not to mention everyone who's at the ballpark every day. It's not just the players. We understand that. But it became more about the commissioner. I'm not a quitter. I mean, I'm not sure exactly where that came from and what he was trying to say. I know he was trying to say, we're going to try to bring this game through, which is great, but this can't be about him. It has to be the players and the people on the front line, the people who are actually risking things by going out and playing. So I think it should have been more about the game and less about himself, and that's what confused me a little bit also.
All right, LZ, Rob Manfred's leadership through the coronavirus pandemic demonstrates that after this season, Rob Manfred needs to go as commissioner of baseball. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Oh, Rob.
I said this yesterday, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
I insinuated yesterday. I was like, going, your leadership in this dog is shaky as hell at best. At best.
At best.
And when you consider the fact that you already are anticipating having a very contentious negotiations for the next collective bargaining agreement, you just don't want that face attached to a conversation about what's best for this sport right now. You just don't. And I don't mean to trash him. These are unprecedented times. But in my opinion, you have fumbled opportunities that have been handed to you. And instead of taking ownership of those fumblings, you blame the players, which only exasperates the weakened relationship you have with them to begin with. So I do believe this is his last season, or at least it should be his last season.
I agree with you too, that these are unprecedented times, and these are things that people are navigating initially with absolutely no background and no experience, and no one has had to deal with this before. NBA got it right. MLS got it right. NASCAR has done a pretty good job. The PGA Tour has done a pretty good job. Other leagues have gotten through this. It is unprecedented. It is uncharted waters, but we've seen other leagues navigate it far better than baseball. And the reason it is they have better leadership. It's not complicated. They have better leadership. They have better representatives, right, better relationships with their constituents. And Rob Manfred has demonstrated poor leadership. He has a bad relationship with his constituents. And that means you got to go find somebody else. With that in mind, LZ, kind of putting these two things together, baseball having, we see what's happened with the Cardinals, we've seen what's happened with the Marlins, we know that football camps are open and we're getting closer to the beginning of the season. MLB and the NFL should set up a snitch line like the NBA. Take it or shake it.
Chivas.
Oh, take it.
Take it.
Take it. Come on. The jokes write themselves. Come on, man. But in all honesty, it also is just one more little layer that's floating out there in the ether to remind knuckleheads to be responsible, because this is about something greater than themselves. Now, clearly, we've seen examples in which in the NBA, as much as they've tried, some players still don't follow the exact protocols to a T. We get that. Dwight Howard got in trouble right out the gate. We get that. But as many different safety marks and benchmarks you can create around this bubble to help try to keep it safe, I think it's important. And if you don't have a bubble, I think it's extra important. Now, I don't necessarily think it's going to be productive in terms of people are actually going to get caught up on who are actually doing terrible things and need to be removed. I just think that the threat of it being there may curtail someone, or at least make that person pause. Makes that person pause, like going, you know what?
I don't want somebody to drop a dime.
Exactly. I don't want to do that.
He saw me. I better stay in. All right, one more quick one here, LZ. A number of WNBA players are wearing T-shirts advocating for the candidacy of Raphael Warnock in an effort to unseat Kelly Loeffler as a senator from Georgia. This is one of the great burns in sports history. Take it or shake it.
Take it. And seriously, we spent a lot of time talking about Colin Kaepernick. We spent a lot of time talking about LeBron James and the efforts that's being done in the NBA. And that's all true. The WNBA has been leading in this with the realness. Their energy, the men have not matched. Still, the energy that the women in the WNBA come with when it comes to social justice issues and these topics, the men haven't matched yet. I'm just being real with it. And so this is just one more step. The boldness. It's like going, no, we're not going to ask you to sell. No, we're not going to force you to sell. No. But we will get our hands dirty in politics. We will do that. And, I mean, a lot of leagues don't want to take that step. But here's the WNBA saying, yeah, we're not afraid. I'm taking it, man. Take it.
I love that we've entered the era where the players can tell the owners, you know what, now watch this. I just love it. It because it's going to create great content, it's going to create great stories, and it's the right thing to do. So it's a win across the board. The Dodgers got a win last night in San Diego, and they're doing it without some of their best guys. We'll explain next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.